Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. So there's a lot of options when it comes to buying flowers for Valentine's Day, but there's only one Rose Authority. 1-800-Flowers.com. Right now, you can order 24 multicolored beautiful roses for only $29.99 or upgrade to 24 red roses for only $10 more. 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity.
Amendola for two. He's in! Patriots win the Super Bowl! Brady has his fifth! What a comeback!
One of the most amazing football games you'll ever, ever, ever see. Linda, they didn't win by 100, but they did win. So you got the colors right this year, and that's the test. Me, Ethan, Linda.
I've been right the last 4 years by just picking colors.
Are you using that as a betting system, picking colors? You know why I love this? This is why, you know, liberals love art. They're artists. They love art. They love crucifixes submerged in urine and elephant dug on the Virgin Mary, and that to them is art. You know, look at Matt Ryan when he threw the ball to Julio Jones and literally off the fingertips of the Patriots defender on the sideline. Such a gutsy throw. You talk about threading a needle. There is an art to sports that you cannot duplicate, as evidenced by the massive ratings the Super Bowl had last night. As you can imagine, the first time ever. Why I like this and why I picked, what did I say? And we'll get to predictions later in the show. What did I say? I said, you can't take the experience of Belichick, Brady, and Bob Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, out of the equation. Now, Matt Ryan is a phenomenal quarterback. He had a phenomenal game. He did nothing wrong except one play, and it really wasn't his fault, towards the end of the game in the fourth quarter, which is the only turnover that really mattered for them. And Brady earlier in the game had thrown a pick six. So it's just such a great game. And it's why, you know, I get bored in museums. And why do people love sports this much? Because it's, you don't get any better than that. And literally from behind, and so many of my friends were writing me, this is going to be just like Trump on election night. He's going to win. Just like, it's not like the election. It's not like the exit polls were right. They were wrong. And there were so many friends of mine in Atlanta writing me, not this year. We got it this year. And I'm like, not so fast. I kept saying, the game isn't over until the last second ticks off the clock. And sure enough, it became one of the greatest games ever. You know, one of the reasons I defended Tom Brady on Deflategate, and it's hard for a guy that's a Jets and Giants fan to do that, but I am a Tom Brady fan. And I just admire his skill. You cannot deny at this point he goes down in history as one of, if not the greatest quarterback ever to play in the NFL. What you saw was just mastery last night in the fourth quarter and in overtime by just one of the most skilled, pressured players ever to put on an NFL uniform. It's unbelievable. And I always thought Deflategate was a bunch of nonsense. First of all, they had killed the Colts by like 40 points. It wasn't like a close game, and things came down to the fact Tom Brady likes, there's a pressure zone where you can have it between, I think, 12 pounds per square inch, 13 pounds per square inch, whatever it is. Aaron Rodgers likes the maximum amount of pressure legally he can put in. And Tom, for feel-wise, likes the minimal amount. It's just preference based on a quarterback. And by the way, it's so insignificant, you can't really tell the difference. And so they have this big fight over Deflategate, and everybody's calling him a cheater. Okay, well, I guess he showed everybody last night, first of all, that the NFL should have been monitoring the footballs and in control of the footballs in the first place, not the teams. And number two, that you cannot take away what a great player he is. Just look at what happened last night in the game. You know, it's just one thing. And this is what I love about sports. Every professional athlete, now think about this in terms of your own life. Every professional athlete is a risk taker. Every one of them. Every professional athlete runs the risk that their body at some point is going to give out and break down. The average time an NFL player is a professional is like 3.5 years. And that's assuming they survive 4 hard college years, 4 hard high school years, and, you know, sort of like youth football, and they come through it without any major significant injuries, and that they're able to get to that level. But the average lifespan of an NFL player is under 4 years. And by the way, by regulation, if you want the exact PSI, it's, what, 12.5 to 13.5 pounds per square inch PSI for a football. So everyone's making a big deal. It was so insignificant, the difference. And the quality and the weather have an impact on whether or not some of the balls might lose a little PSI. And if you start out at 12.5 and it goes below 12.5, they made such a big deal out of nothing, as if that made the difference in a game that they won. Anyway, so every athlete, I don't care if you're a pitcher in baseball, you're looking at the most skilled people. If you can throw a fastball, you know, 90, 95, 100 miles an hour, or in the case of Chapman, who now plays for the Yankees again, the reliever, 105 miles an hour. And if you can hit a ball 105 miles an hour, and if you could, you know, pull a Plaxico, a Burris, and pull in a one-hander, or, you know, any of these great receivers. Look at Edelman last night in that catch that just, it didn't hit the ground, but it was like an inch above the ground, and he held on to it and got control of the football. You're watching the threading of a needle at such a high level, but their entire career is a risk. You know, they're risking their whole life. Some players will never, ever get to a Super Bowl and achieve their dream. Some players will never get to a World Series. Some hockey players will never get to a World Cup. And you may never get a big payday, and then you've given up a good portion of the younger years in your life training every single day, trying to be the best person you can be, and then you've got these few rare, very extremely talented people that make it to the top, and those are the ones that we cheer for. Why? Because they work so hard to get there, and we can't do what they do. And that's the amazing part of it. You know, and the risk that they may never get paid. No, those contracts here, oh, they got a $50 million contract. It's not guaranteed in the NFL. Maybe half, if you're lucky. We had Joe Theismann on the program last week. He had signed a five-year deal. At the time, it was a lot of money, $1 million a year. And then Lawrence Taylor broke his leg. It was a career-ending injury. And he never played in the NFL again. And younger players are always behind you trying to get your job. So look at the pitchers today. They're trying so hard. That how many pitchers now have Tommy John surgery? You know, look at the injuries, the concussion impact issue that the NFL's been having, because these guys have taken so many hits and they're encouraged to play so hard. It's pretty incredible. But what I love about the sports, and what I love about all sports, is it represents and duplicates life. And if you train like an athlete in whatever field of endeavor you want to be in, and you find your passion, and you work to be the best you could be and get good at what it is that you love, and you learn that you're not going to have a straight, you know, vertical trajectory in your career, that things, you know, a little up and down, two steps forward, one step back, et cetera, it's a little jagged. You learn how to win. That's the fun part. You learn how to lose, and then you learn from your mistakes, and you try and get better. And you also learn that the harder you work, whatever your field of endeavor is, it's likely you're going to be better at what you do. And there are a lot of people that are fundamentally in life lazy. They don't want to put the hard work in. They think that they're just going to get to the NFL and that all the glory and all the money and all the accolades come with it, and they don't want to put the work in. And if you put the work in, look at the guys that always seem to do the best. They work the hardest. Look at the Patriots' team discipline leading up to a Super Bowl. Nobody's out there in the media, you know, challenging and inspiring the other team. They're focused fully on what they do. They have their media day, which I'm sure Belichick would never want to do if you paid him five times as much as he's paid. I love his press conferences. How do you think the game was going to go, Coach? How do you think it's going? Good. How about you? Next question. Are you prepared for the Atlanta Falcons? Yeah, we're prepared. Next question. How many times have we interviewed people like that over the years? Okay, get that person off the phone. It's like, what's the point? But he does it on purpose. He doesn't want to give away his secrets. I could tell you how to fix CNN tomorrow. I could tell you how to fix MSNBC. I could tell you things that would definitely work. I could tell the media how to fix the horrible ratings and their low approval rating with their audience. It would start with a mea culpa, admitting that they've been wrong and one-sided and biased. And yes, they colluded with a political candidate, but they're not going to do that either. Anyway, it was just a great game. And I know there was politics, and I know some of the ads were offensive. Lady Gaga, I thought, did a great job. She really kind of impressed me more than I thought I'd be impressed. And I paid a lot of attention to it. So anyway, we'll talk about that throughout the day. We'll go to our predictions from Friday. We also have the immigration ban, and we're waiting a Ninth Circuit Court of Approval. Now, you got to remember, the Ninth Circuit, San Francisco, one of the most liberal courts in the country. I'm not expecting a whole lot there. We've got a big story about Republicans going wobbly. Nobody in the media seems to be putting together what I'm putting together in terms of Iran. You have the president speaking at CENTCOM this morning and talking to the people over there. Between what General Flynn said, now pay attention, follow the bouncing ball here. What General Flynn said, we're putting you on notice. What Trump said, I'm not Barack Obama, I'm not him, as friendly as him. Then the sanctions are in place. Then the USS Cole is placed off the coast of Yemen. Then the president goes to CENTCOM. And the Iranians are saber-rattling. You got to know that something may happen here. And it's not going to be a protracted war, so then it really then limits the options of what I think could potentially happen. And we know where Donald Trump, the president, stands on the nuclear deal. We know that he was against, you know, remember, the original promise was any place, anytime inspections. Well, that never happened. We have no U.S. inspectors. They have 25 days notice. They got to continue to spin their centrifuges. They partnered with the Russians on missile defense, which is one of the best defense systems built in the world today. And they paid a ransom, and they gave them $150 billion. So, you know, there's a lot of movement here that nobody's paying attention to that we'll get to. The most important thing that I think happened over the weekend is, and, you know, everyone's making a big deal about Kellyanne misspeaking about Bowling Green in a terror case, and it's been a four-day story. But when the judge that blocked President Trump's terrorist travel ban on Friday night, you know, made an incredible courtroom blunder, which is almost certainly, I think, guided in his ruling in the case, it seemed like he relied on alt-left fake news and the media could care less. I'll tell you what that's about and what I think's going to happen with the courts and where this is going to end up. Now, the administration has a deadline until, I think, what, 6 o'clock today to get in there and put in a rebuttal to the Ninth Circuit. They might even wait until Neil Gorsuch is approved to the Supreme Court and may make an appeal there. We'll have to wait and see. You know, there are a lot of options when it comes to buying flowers for Valentine's Day, but there's only one True Rose Authority. 1-800-Flowers never fails to wow all the women in my life with the elegant and stunning bouquets that they have available. And 1-800-Flowers, they have the best deals on Valentine's Day essentials. And the best part, they start at just $29.99. Now, simply pick the delivery date and let 1-800-Flowers handle the rest. 1-800-Flowers has an exclusive offer just for you, my Sean Hannity Show listeners. Now, today's offer is 24 multicolored roses for only $29.99. You can upgrade to 24 red roses for only $10 more. But that's only while supplies last. Now, to get amazing Valentine's Day deals like 24 multicolored roses for $29.99 or to upgrade to 24 red roses for $10 more, just go to 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. Do it now for all the women in your life that you love. All right, so let me explain, give you boring background details that you kind of need to understand what this immigration ban is about, how it is at the Ninth Circuit, where it goes from here, what happens next. The deadline for states, Washington, Minnesota, to file their opposition to the DOJ's appeal is, what date is today, the 5th? 6th. Oh, it was last night. Okay, February 6th is the deadline for the Trump Department of Justice to file its reply to the state's opposition. So that could happen tonight, meaning the Ninth Circuit. But if you go back, the state of Washington first filed the lawsuit against Trump and various agencies, including DHS, in one of what is going to be many legal challenges by the left to stop the Trump agenda. What they can't do legislatively, what they can't win at the during elections, in the elections, they try to do through judges. That's why Neil Gorsuch appointed to the Supreme Court so important. So January 30th, they put in a request for a temporary restraining order. They filed that, a complaint. The judge of Minnesota joined the lawsuit the next day, or 2 days later. The federal judge, James Robart, issued a temporary blocking enforcement of Trump's executive order. Then the Department of Justice appealed that decision to the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit denied to take up the motion to reinstate the travel ban in the early morning in an overnight ruling. And what happens next is the deadline for the Department of Justice to file their reply is at 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern time. All right. So that's the timeline. The Ninth Circuit, what this comes down to is when it was issued, you had plaintiffs. What the lower court judge said is the plaintiffs are likely to succeed on the merits, that they've established that there are serious questions going to the merits of their claims. Now, what they're ignoring here is the actual law of the land. And this is pivotal in this case if you want to understand what this is really all about. Because I'll give you what the law 8 U.S.C., U.S. Code 1182 says. Pay close attention. Whenever the president finds that the entry of any aliens or any class of aliens into the U.S. would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may by proclamation and for such period, remember this was temporary, as he shall deem necessary, suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants or non-immigrants, or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem appropriate. The law cannot be any more clear than that. Now, what you have here is, once again, judicial activism. What you have here is legislating from the bench, and we've got evidence to prove that, which I'll get to when we get back on this busy Monday edition. Well, who was calling? I guess it was Maxine Waters is now calling for Donald Trump's impeachment. Listen to what she said.
I'm a congresswoman. You've served through several different presidential administrations. From your tenured opinion, what is it that the American people can really expect over the next 4 years out of President Trump?
Well, I hope he's not there for 4 years. I hope that, you know, this man and who he is, what he's done, the way that he's defined himself, the way that he's acting, I am hoping that we're able to reveal all of this. And my greatest desire is to lead him right into impeachment.
That's their goal. All right. So now that's their stated goal. I told you and tweeted out what the Democrats and David Brock and the Media Matters crowd, one of their top strategies to stop Trump is to use the court system, which I just went over. And again, now they have a decision to make, and that is whether or not they will file, the Department of Justice will file their reply by 3 p.m. today Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern time, as it relates to the travel ban. Now, you know, I know Kellyanne misspoke about Bowling Green, big deal, and the terror case there. And they are, the media can't stand. If you say one thing, well, we have alternative facts. What do you mean alternative? In other words, we don't agree with your interpretation. We think you're lying. That's what alternative facts means. Everybody knew. Everybody understood. But anything Trump is going to be treated much differently than anything Hillary or Obama by the colluding media. So when a judge blocks President Trump's terrorist travel ban, now remember, all this is temporary. Of the 325,000 travelers that day, 109 were inconvenienced. Now it's a question of, do you prefer inconvenience for people coming into the country versus gambling with the lives of Americans? And I think the answer is pretty simple. What it is that we ought to do: protect the American people first. Now, by the way, this is not unlike a lot. We have Bill Clinton and we have Obama sounding an awful lot like Donald Trump. And the reason I'm playing this is because, you know, it's interesting that the media didn't get all bent out of shape when they said this.
All Americans, not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country, are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. In the budget I will present to you, we will try to do more to speed the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace, as recommended by the commission headed by former Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws.
Even as we are a nation of immigrants, we're also a nation of laws. Undocumented workers broke our immigration laws, and I believe that they must be held accountable, especially those who may be dangerous. When I took office, I committed to fixing this broken immigration system, and I began by doing what I could to secure our borders. But today, our immigration system is broken, and everybody knows it. There are actions I have the legal authority to take as president. Tonight, I'm announcing those actions.
All right, I'm going to step in here. It's everybody knows, but nobody. His actions made it easier for illegal immigrants that broke the laws that he specified to stay in the country. And then, of course, criminal aliens were set free. And then sanctuary cities allow the same thing. And then the whole anchor baby syndrome, if an illegal immigrant comes to America, the child's born here, automatically a U.S. citizen. All of this has to be dealt with. They all said it. They all sound like Trump. Now, the judge in this case, and WorldNet Daily had a pretty good piece about this, should have probably recused himself, because the judge that issued this stay in Seattle of the president's executive order barring entry to immigrants from these seven Mideastern terror hotspots that the Obama administration identified claimed in his courtroom that no person from those countries have been arrested in the U.S. since 9/11. And there was a courtroom exchange on Friday with Department of Justice and their lawyer, Michelle Bennett, and the federal judge said, well, how many arrests have there been of foreign nationals from those seven countries since 9/11? And Bennett did said, I don't have the specific details, etc., and who is from the Department of Justice's Civil Division. The answer to that is none, said the judge, best I can tell. Well, the judge is horrendously wrong. Now, that's a problem. Travelers and immigrants from seven countries have indeed been involved in murders of Americans and other heinous crimes. You know, in November of 2009, Major Hassan shot 13 people, injured more than 30 people at Fort Hood in Texas. While the Army major was an American, he received counseling and encouragement from Yemen-based Imam Anwar al-Awlaki, who traveled frequently to the U.S. and was later killed in a drone attack. Or in 2011, Rahim al-Fatlawi, 47, an Iraqi native living in Minneapolis, shot his stepdaughter fatally in the head because she moved away and was becoming westernized. And he was sent to prison for his life. And then in 2016, Dahir Ahmad Adan, born in Somalia, entered through St. Cloud, Minnesota, dressed as a security guard, began stabbing individuals. An off-duty cop shot him. Or a Somalian refugee, Abdul Razak Ali Artan, attacked 11 Americans with a car and a knife at the campus of Ohio State. Two Iraqi refugees resettled in Bowling Green were arrested and convicted of providing weapons and other material support to al-Qaeda in Iraq in 2011. So I'm not sure what this judge is thinking, or the judge makes these statements without any basis in fact. But if that is his, this comes down to his personal decision. I just read you the U.S. code. Whenever the president finds the entry of any alien of any class or any class of aliens into the U.S. would be detrimental to the interest of the U.S., he may by proclamation and for such period as he shall deem necessary suspend the entry of all aliens of any class of aliens or immigrants or non-immigrants or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem to be appropriate. What part of that law is not clear? U.S. Code 8-1182. Meanwhile, since the temporary ban has been lifted, refugees are racing to come in here, including an Iranian researcher who's racing to get in here. Well, what does that mean? It means that they're gambling with your life. And the Ninth Circuit's decline only reinforces everything we've known about the Ninth Circuit, which is an extremely leftist judicial activist court, which means that now they've got to make a decision at the Trump White House. Do they wait till Neil Gorsuch is on the Supreme Court? And will the Supreme Court even involve itself in the case? You know, it shows that it's everything that we've talked about in the importance of the judicial branch of government. There's a great piece by our buddy Daniel Horowitz today. Rogue judges undermine our sovereignty. and he lays out different ways that Congress can stop them. Because the law is clear. The president, A, has the authority. That's first and foremost. But he points out that the judge in this case of the Western District of Washington State issues the temporary injunction. And, you know, that is a radical opinion. That is legislating from the bench. That is allowing one's personal views to take over any reference or rule of law. It is lawlessness on the judge's part. Well, he's criticizing the judge. Well, Abraham Lincoln criticized judges. Obama criticized the Supreme Court right in front of them, for crying out loud. Now, what he's doing, this judge, is he's stopping the president from executing the law. These laws were passed by Congress. What do you think separation of powers is all about? What do you think co-equal branches of government is all about? He literally, this judge, independently, as a party of one, and the Ninth Circuit likely to follow, is circumventing an entire branch of government and taking on power and authority that is not conferred to him and them through the Constitution. It's unconstitutional what he has done. They're inventing new constitutional rights for non-citizens. These are non-citizens, and they're breaking a law passed by Congress and signed into law by a president of the United States. Now, what does that mean for future cases? Well, I told you, David Brock and company, one of the ways they feel they can stop the Trump agenda is using all the liberal justices that Clinton and that maybe even Bush in some cases, rarely, but some, and Obama have put on the bench. And then they'll just go judge shopping to liberal judges. And this is going to go on and on and on throughout the Trump presidency. And it's ignoring the law. It's ignoring the Constitution. It's ignoring tradition. And it's just another way that the left has designed what they can't get you to vote for them at the ballot box for, what they can't get done through constitutional co-equal branches of government, they look to the courts to do. And what modern courts have done is they're chipping away at the Constitution. They're chipping away and they're ceding. Congress has ceded, in the case of Obama, they ceded the power of the purse to the president. Now they're ceding their constitutional authority to be a legislative branch of government because their laws now are rendered meaningless by one rogue judge. So the answer is Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution, and move to strip the lower courts of jurisdiction to grant rights to any foreign national to enter or remain in the country against the law unless the statute explicitly preempts the president's action. And clearly, I've read you the statute twice. It is within the president's authority and power. And now the liberal alt-left radical media, they're mad that, well, the courts are making the job very difficult. Yeah, because they're legislating from the bench. And what about all the countries, by the way, that prevent people with Israeli passports? Remember I talk about immigration. Well, how does Mexico treat illegal immigrants? They beat them. They put them in jail. And they send them back to their home country. And then we get lectured by the likes of former President Vicente Fox on how we ought to treat their illegal immigrants here. Does anybody know that there's countries that have a ban of anybody that has an Israeli passport? Oh, those countries, six of the seven that Trump had the ban on are in this list. Syria, Iran, Iraq, Yemen, Libya, Algeria, Bangladesh, Brunei, Kuwait, Lebanon, Malaysia, Oman, Pakistan, Sudan, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE. These are real permanent bans. If you have an Israeli passport, you don't get in to some 16 Muslim countries. There's a whole list of them. And Trump is being urged to wait by some to delay appealing this travel ban until the Supreme Court majority he needs to ensure a win is put in place. And I don't know what the right answer is here, because I don't think you're going to get a lot of help from a very abusively biased Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. You know, by the way, unlike Trump, Obama defied court orders he didn't like. That was the first thing I was thinking about. You know, he issued what he called a nationwide ruling against the Trump terrorist ban. You know, I'm thinking, you know, shouldn't Trump just do what Obama did? Obama said 25 times he didn't have the right to issue the executive order and circumvent the law as it relates to immigration with his executive orders. Obama did it time and time again. And how many times did lower court judges issue rulings that Obamacare is unconstitutional? That happened at least three or four times. How many? How did the White House react? Under Obama, they said, fine, we'll see you in court. And in the meantime, they went forward with Obamacare. So if the Trump terrorist travel ban is unconstitutional, where was the nutty judge when Obama imposed his own terrorist travel ban against Iraqis, as he did in 2011, that Hillary supported? Harvard law professor, no friend of mine, Alan Dershowitz, opposes the ban. He made the same point. And he actually went on to say Saturday that President Trump respected the independence of the judiciary by appealing rather than ignoring. Trump could do what Obama did and ignore it. And if I was him, if this keeps going this way, he may not have any other option here. By the way, a police officer complaining about terror country migrants are destroying Sweden. We keep reporting about what's happened in Europe. Turkey rounded up 445 suspected terrorists over the weekend. And now Trump has an uphill battle here. And in the meantime, by the way, you got people like Mitch McConnell siding with Democrats on key Trump issues over the weekend. I'm like, really? We can't count on him? You know, McConnell, no federal money for investigating voter fraud. McConnell said on distance himself from Trump on positions on voter fraud, the travel ban, criticizing the president for attacking the federal judge who was wrong and wrong on the law. And now they're saying Obamacare, well, it may not be replaced. It may be repaired. And then they're saying it may be the end of the year. And then they're saying that, well, we might have to put off our tax plan till the end of the year. If you guys don't act and you delay Trump's tax cuts, this is a massive risk. Paul Ryan said lawmakers are going to first focus on replacing or repairing Obamacare. Then they'll take up tax bills. Why in God's name don't these guys do their job? This is their window of opportunity to move. Get your ass in gear, all you Republicans in the House and Senate, and do your job. You have all three branches. Go. You have the House, you have the Senate, and you not three. You have all three. You know what I'm saying. You have the House, you have the Senate, and you have the White House. Get your job done. Keep up with Trump. Good grief.
The guest that won't go on any other radio shows, and he does it every single day. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two Go Anywhere pillows. Now MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two Go Anywhere pillows for 40% off. And that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
After nearly 2 years of intensive negotiations, backed by strong sanctions, the countries represented in this room achieved what decades of animosity and rhetoric did not, a long-term deal that closes off every possible path to building a nuclear weapon and subjects Iran to the most comprehensive nuclear inspections ever negotiated. And thanks to this deal, we have seen real progress. Already, Iran has dismantled two-thirds of its installed centrifuges. Iran has shipped 98% of its enriched uranium stockpile out of Iran. Iran has removed the Iraq reactor core and filled it with concrete. If Iran were to cheat, the breakout time to build a nuclear weapon has gone from 2 to 3 months to about a year. In January, the IAEA verified that Iran had fulfilled key commitments of the deal. And today, Director General Amano will update us on implementation. Our nations have lifted nuclear-related sanctions, and it will take time for Iran to reintegrate into the global economy. But Iran is already beginning to see the benefits of this deal. Now, I think it's important to note that this deal does not resolve all of our differences with Iran, including destabilizing activities in the region. Except for limited exceptions, the U.S. trade embargo on Iran remains in place.
And wouldn't it be more accurate to say that a ransom is paid and then you get the people back and not the reverse, which is what happened in this case?
Again, we don't pay ransom, Roz.
Right.
This wasn't a case of ransom. And again, I need to remind you all, while maybe the little bit of the TikTok here that's driven out, you might find new and salacious, there's really nothing new here in the story about how we got those Americans out and how we leveraged opportunities here that were coming together at the same time. You can go back and look at the president's comments and the secretary's comments when all of this happened. There were opportunities here that we took advantage of, and as a result, we were able to get American citizens back home.
All right, there you hear. That was the worst deal. Hour two, Sean Hannity show. I keep saying you better pay very, very close attention to what is happening in Iran right now. Now the Iranian mullahs are out there saber rattling. I guess they think that the same person as president. Remember, Donald Trump is not Barack Obama. He didn't pay them ransom for hostages. He didn't pay $150 billion so they can build up their nuclear program even further and continue to partner with missile defense with Vladimir Putin and also build more fighter jets as the deal allows. They continue to spin their centrifuges. There's not any place, anytime inspections as was originally promised. We have 25 days notice that we will give them before any inspections, which is an eternity for them to cover up whatever dirty deeds they're involved in. There are no U.S. inspectors allowed in this deal. And now that Donald Trump has become president, General Flynn put them on notice after they broke the U.N. deal that they had agreed to and had a ballistic missile test. Now they're having more. Donald Trump tweeted out, "No, I'm not as kind as Obama. You better be careful." And sanctions are now being put back in place. Now, I say this as the Jerusalem Post has an article that Iran only needs 7 minutes. That's all that's needed for an Iranian missile to hit Tel Aviv, hit Israel. That is a very short period of time. And even though I've seen the Iron Dome in action with my own eyes, what if it doesn't work? What if somehow they're incapacitated at the time that nuclear missile is hit? What if it's taken out of the air? What is the potential nuclear fallout damage wherever it's taken out? Anyway, here to weigh in on this, somebody who knows a lot about Iran and has risked his life for his country in battling Iran and understands the advancement of the caliphate and the crazy mullahs that are there is Colonel Oliver North. How are you, sir?
I'm glad to be with you, brother.
All right, so we saw what Obama did. I just laid it out. We see now what Trump is doing. We see the Iranians now are saber-rattling. What's going to happen?
Well, let's start with the sanctions. And as you and I know, earlier today, the president was at MacDill Air Force Base to address the troops at CENTCOM and the Special Operations Command. So, and we can get to that. But first of all, the sanctions. The sanctions that were imposed late last week targets members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. By the way, it's not the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. You know that, but most of our listeners constantly hear people saying it's the Iranian. It's not. It's the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. It was one of the very first acts taken by the Ayatollah Khomeini when he came back from Paris and took over the rebellion and then ended up holding American hostages for 444 days. So it targets the IRGC, the Iranian military, and the Iranian government-owned businesses and bank accounts. And it's roughly 25 individuals, and as they describe it in his executive order, entities associated with Iran's ballistic missile program. Now, here's the challenge here. The order cites individuals and entities procuring the technology and the materials of Iran's missile program. It includes, and I quote again, those acting for or on behalf of or providing support to the IRGC Quds Force, which is their Special Operations Command that operates totally independent of their military, of course, and is at the direction of the supreme leader, the dictator who runs the government in Tehran. Those are referred to as coercive unilateral sanctions. They are appropriately aimed at the suppliers who are aiding and abetting Iran's ballistic missile program and terrorism, but because the sanctions are unilateral, in other words, no one else has joined us in this, they're going to be largely ineffective unless the order is modified. And here's how you can make unilateral sanctions, coercive sanctions, work, amend that order. Let's say sometime later this week. I was hoping maybe he would do it down at MacDill, but he didn't. Here's the way it should read, something like this. In 10 days, all businesses and banks doing any business whatsoever with those aforementioned Iranian entities and similar entities in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea will be barred from doing any business in the United States. Now, that will work, because even though Moscow and Beijing and the bureaucrats, the make nice progressives here in this country, are going to go nuts because that sanctions language will impact every company providing any kind of support for their missile program.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, here's what it'll hit, because these companies want to do business in this country, right? So it's computers, other technologies like satellite control, missile parts, rocket motors, fuel components, and explosive components, guidance systems, tracking sensors, even tires for the trucks that move this stuff. If they want to sell tires in America, they have to stop selling tires to those entities in Iran. Those are the kinds of sanctions that will actually hurt.
All right, but when you add up what the president has done here and General Flynn putting them on notice, him tweeting out he's not like Barack Obama.
Well, that's for sure.
The sanctions, that's for sure. That's the understatement of the year. But also the sanctions he's putting in place and putting the USS Cole in a position where they can quickly be off the Straits of Hormuz off the coast of Yemen. And then he goes to CENTCOM today. Now, we both know that he doesn't want any protracted conflict. Let me ask you this. Is it beyond comprehension that we can see in a short period of time, short meaning 6 months, an alliance between Saudi Arabia, the United States, the Israelis, the Egyptians and Jordanians to take out the nuclear facilities, which represents an existential threat to mankind, which would be an incredibly difficult operation, as you know, because all of those sites are buried deep underground and they are spread throughout the entire country? Is that a possibility?
And they are also protected by the Russian SA-300 system, which is probably the best anti-aircraft system in the
world. And by the way, that was part of the nuclear deal that Obama made with the Iranians, which was stupid.
It's mind-numbing what we gave away. And, of course, President Trump was right all the way throughout the campaign. He was saying it's the worst possible deal. It is. And as I know you've noticed that, and some of our listeners may not have yet, is Prime Minister Netanyahu met earlier today with Prime Minister May in Great Britain, asking the Brits to join him in the effort. The European response to this, by the way, is what they call BDS, boycott, divest, and sanction. In other words, they are punishing the Israelis for being Israelis. And so the Brits have yet to join the BDS movement, which is part of the EU, right? Despite the kinds of terrorism that have affected all of them in Europe, and what you're looking at is a new reality because America is leading again. I mean, the best news in all of this is that America is not led by somebody who believes in the oxymoron of leading from behind. It's a three-word oxymoron. You cannot lead from behind. And that's what we've had for 8 years of this, Sean. And so I know it's a shock to lots of people that this president's acting the way he is. It's all stuff he talked about that he was going to do if he got elected, and thank God he is. I mean, look, earlier today when he was at MacDill, generally speaking, the troops are very polite to the commander-in-chief. They get up when he walks in the room, they applaud, and when he's done, they sit down and applaud, right? And at the end of this, in the middle of today's remarks at MacDill, talking to the troops and their leaders of those two commands, Central Command and Special Operations Command, both headquartered at MacDill Air Force Base in Florida. The troops wildly applauded President Trump's decisions on making sure that those who come to America aren't going to blow us up. I mean, it is unheard of. He recognizes the extraordinary capabilities of America's military, not just because of the equipment we've got, which is, mind-boggling when you think about it. The fact is, he recognizes that these are the best and bravest of an entire generation. And I watched that earlier today on our network and said, you know what? It's a new world order, and Donald Trump is leading the way.
You know, what's really sad about this, remember back in the 80s when the Israelis took out Saddam Hussein's sites And remember, there was 1981. There was worldwide condemnation. Nobody really paid attention when the Israelis were able to sneak in under the Syrian radar and pretty much do the same thing to Syria. I mean, it's one of the most incredible military operations in our lifetime, and most of the world missed it. What was that, about 10 years ago? And now we find ourselves in a situation where A squared plus B squared equals C squared. And I'm convinced if the radical Islamic mullahs get weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons, they'll use them.
They have said they will.
All right, stay on the other side. I want to ask you, what would be the time frame in your mind that this needs to be handled? We'll continue more with Colonel Oliver North, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. On the other side of the half hour, we'll get to your call.
The one radio show you don't want to miss. Sean Hannity is on right now.
Continue with Colonel Oliver North. Iran is now saber-rattling. We had the president over at CENTCOM earlier today. The USS Cole has been sent off the coast of Yemen. We have sanctions now the president has put in place. General Flynn has put Iran on notice. And the president has said, I am not Barack Obama. So is there a potential conflict lining up? Now, in the meantime, the prime minister of Israel is soon this month coming to the United States. I know for a fact that the King of Jordan has also met with the president and with the vice president. And I also know that General al-Sisi of Egypt has spoken with the president and vice president also, and the Saudis as well. So do you see a possible alliance? I know it's Sunni versus Shia, but do you see an odd alliance in the region emerging where the United States could lead the tactical support to take out the nuclear facilities and any groundwork is going to be on behalf of the other countries?
Sean, on the day that they announced the so-called Vienna Accord, a joint document that the Obama administration called a good deal, that same day, King Salman, who was at that point the new king in Saudi Arabia, invited to join him in Riyadh al-Sisi from Egypt, Abdullah from Jordan, Erdogan from Turkey, and Sharif from Pakistan, plus the two emirs who govern UAE, Dubai, and Abu Dhabi. The only one who didn't actually make it was Abdullah because he was targeted for assassination that day, and so he sent the chief of staff of their Air Force and their army, the military. What was that meeting? If you think about who those people are, it was, I believe, and I think there's evidence that they'll find was actually collected at the time. What was Salman was doing was putting on notice, I want the weapons that we paid for in Pakistan, not all 200 of them. Pakistan probably has something in the neighborhood of 200 nuclear weapons. They have the Chinese missiles that were provided for them, all of it paid for by Saudi Arabia. The meeting lasted 4 or 5 hours, and everybody went home. No one's ever made any announcements about that. We also know, because they've told us, the Saudis and the Israelis are talking regularly about the threat posed by Iran. Now, staying outside the box has not helped the United States. My prediction is instead of a nuclear attack on, or even a conventional attack on territory inside Iran, what I think is much more likely is an Aegis-class ship or radars used to detect a launch, whatever it is, of an ICBM or a regional ballistic missile that comes up off the ground in Tehran and then gets taken down by either Israeli or American anti-aircraft or anti-missile defenses. You know, the strange thing of it is we've given them.
But they're still going to be.
We don't have here in America. There's not a single city in America that's protected from an intercontinental ballistic missile.
That's
pointed out.
I've pointed that out many times. But Colonel, the problem is that they continue to spin their centrifuges. The problem is if the nuclear sites aren't taken out, this is a can being kicked out in the road. We only have 20 seconds.
Well, look, this can ought not to be kicked down the road any further. The notice that was served last week and the sanctions that are in place ought to be reinforced with the measures I suggested earlier in this broadcast. That is, any business doing any business whatsoever in Iran or the North Koreans who are cooperating with them in this venture need to be sanctioned that they cannot do business in the United States. That will stop most of it right there.
All right, Colonel Oliver North, we'll have more on this tonight, the showdown that is ratcheting up almost by the hour. Very few people are watching this. I'm telling you, pay close attention. I'm not wrong very often on these things, and I hope in this case I am. Colonel, we'll see you tonight, 800-941-SEAN, safe home. Our toll-free telephone number, you want to be a part of the program. We're talking about anything you want today as... By the way, did I not make the right smart move by getting out of town in Houston early yesterday? I'd never be able to do a good show today. And I put my work, Linda, ahead of, and you were saying, why don't you stay for the game? Why don't you stay for the game? I wanted to stay for the game. So I did go to one.
I was just surprised you didn't pull a Mark Wahlberg.
I saw Mark Wahlberg there. By the way, he's a great guy.
But did you see what happened?
What?
He left.
Left what?
He left the game.
Before the end?
Before the end. And everybody's saying that, you know, he was hanging his head low because his Patriots didn't win. And instead of sticking it out to when they, you know, brought the comeback, he left.
Was he in Robert Kraft's box? I did see Robert Kraft over the weekend.
You act like I know who any of these people are. Moving right
Robert
along.
Kraft is the owner of the Patriots. Kenny Chesney was in the owner's box. And I think Mark Wahlberg, if I'm not mistaken, was he in the owner's box?
I don't know if he was in the owner's box. I know I saw Kenny there predominantly.
Yeah, I saw Kenny. I know he's friends.
This has nothing to do with my story. This is a typical man hijack. My point is...
A man hijack.
You're hijacking
my
story.
Can you imagine if I said typical woman hijack?
You could say that if I did that to you, but I didn't, did I? No, you did it to me. So as I was saying...
First of all,
so Mark Wahlberg leaves...
You know.
They get him leaving. Everybody's like, oh, my God, Mark Wahlberg's leaving early. And then the Patriots make the comeback. And everybody's like, oh, you left. You're not a real fan. And he's like, no. That's not why I left. I didn't leave because I thought we were going to lose. I left because my youngest son was sick and family first. So what do you think? You think he was being honest? Or
yeah,
I think
yeah, I do. Why would you doubt that? And I'll tell you why. Because I saw him. At the Patriots party, in which Robert Kraft was on my TV show Friday night, invited me Friday night to the party. Elton John played at that party. They had this comedian that was off the hook funny. And I got some time alone with him. I told him about that I'm doing a movie because I'm sick of Hollywood. And I explained all of it to him. He goes, that's awesome. He couldn't have been more supportive. And he introduced me to his wife. I've met his wife and children at another Super Bowl. He is surrounded by his family at all times. So the answer is, yeah, I believe him. And, you know, Boston is hardcore, man. I'm telling you. Oh, you left early. You're not a super fan like the rest of us. Family does have to come first. Absolutely. He's right. Brad is in Florida. What's up, Brad? How are you? We're glad you called. Welcome to the Sean Hannity Show.
Thank you, Sean. It's good to be here.
What's going on?
I just called in to say that, my personal decision was to boycott the Super Bowl. I'm just thinking of the double standard that they have.
Oh, you made such a mistake. You made such a mistake.
I'm tired of their double standard. They don't let the Dallas Cowboys wear decals to honor the dead police in Texas. And
I didn't know that. Is that true? I don't even remember that story. I'll be honest. This was a year that I paid less attention to football because I was working so much. And that's just, I didn't have the time and the luxury to be watching. I watch from a distance. I read the sports pages every day. But in all honesty, I just didn't have time. I didn't even do a whole segment, I don't think, maybe one on Colin Kaepernick. And in other years, I would have been ripping him to shreds. Now, I did have a good discussion. I don't want to say, Robert Kraft told me he feels uncomfortable when I tell this story. So I don't want to, I mean, he's the nicest guy in the world, but I love what he did as an owner. Is he got the captains of his team together, and they talked about what the flag means to the American people and to the brave men and women that fought under it. And then he came up with a challenge for some of the guys on his team that he would match them dollar for dollar, go into whatever part of Boston or any area of New England they wanted, and that he would work with them on any charity to make things better, because that's what we're about. And not one Patriot took a knee. Not one Patriot ever went Colin Kaepernick on him. And I just think the way he handled it was really cool. And I thought, you know, he put his money where his mouth is, and he was a leader for the team he owns. And I think one of the reasons that, you know, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick do so well is they've got enormous team discipline. You don't hear them trash talking before Super Bowl games. They're too busy preparing. And even being down, what, 21-3, 28 three, whatever it was. I mean, to make a comeback like that was amazing. So, you know, Brad, just generally speaking, I'm not a big boycotter. I don't blame the NFL for Colin Kaepernick. I don't blame, I think that if the NFL made that decision about the Cowboys, it's probably true. I'm so busy, I missed it. And that was the wrong decision. You know, you saw the reaction when Roger Goodell handed the trophy over to Tom Brady. It was not, or Robert Kraft rather, it was not a good moment for Roger Goodell. You know, I was one of the few people, how much heat did I take over Deflategate? And I said it was never a big deal. And they were making too big a deal of it. I know, for example, Aaron Rodgers loves the max. They have a range of inflating NFL footballs. It's like 12-something to 13-something. I don't know, pounds per square inch. Whatever it is. Aaron Rodgers likes it at the maximum level because that's his feel level. Tom Brady likes it at the lower level. You know, there was never any evidence that convinced me that Tom Brady conspired. They beat the Colts by like a pulp that game. It had no impact on the game whatsoever. And everyone made the biggest deal about it. And I said, I think one of the reasons people want to hate Tom Brady is, number one, he's so talented. Number two, he's good looking. Number three, he wins. Number four, he's got a good looking wife. And number five, he wins. And I think every other team gets frustrated by somebody that wins that much. But, you know, on the other hand, I look at somebody like him. I look at the last quarter of that game last night and the overtime of that game last night. And what you are watching is somebody that was born to do what he does. And that natural gifted talent during the highest pressure moments is what separates champions from just the average football player. And he's a champion. And to watch that art, and I'm going to tell you, everyone, like, they love to talk about art. Artiste. And everyone in Hollywood is an artist. And they like champagne and caviar. No, that's all right. And I'm watching this. You know what's artful? Is Matt Ryan throwing the ball an inch over the Patriots' hand into the arms of, remember late in the game, and that sideline catch? I forget who he threw it to. You remember who he threw it to?
Of course I do, yeah.
Not you, Ethan. Remember Matt Ryan's throw, sideline catch?
Number 11.
Yeah, not that guy, okay. And then, you know, look at Edelman's catch of the night, which transformed the game. Look at when, you know.
Taylor Gabriel?
All right, will you stop?
It was not Taylor Gabriel.
All right, nice try. All right, so, but look at that is an art. The amount of work that goes into being a star athlete is unbelievable. Now, I've got two kids that play sports at a pretty high level. And the amount of training that goes into what they do is, it's just pretty breathtaking to me. I wish I had that opportunity to be a professional athlete.
Julio Jones?
Yes, I think you're actually
right. Yes! Victory is mine!
I think you're actually right.
Redemption for the 100-point spread.
Yeah, the 100-point spread, girls, we're going to call
it. Listen, that game, it looked like it was possible.
Did you watch the game?
No, I was on the turnpike.
And you didn't watch the Puppy Bowl? Did you record the Puppy Bowl?
You know, I didn't, actually.
Did you record the Lingerie Bowl?
That's right up my alley.
Do they even have a Lingerie Bowl anymore?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
That is an art form. You know, being able to throw a 100-mile-an-hour fastball and get the ball over the plate on a regular basis, that's an art form. Being able to hit it over the fence is another art form. I've never liked art. I've never liked museums. I like my buddy John McNaughton because he's so talented. You know, art is subjective. I have the Forgotten Man photo here in my studio, but there's a certain artistry to doing this. You know, I love all these people in the course of my career that have predicted my failure. And it is all it has ever done is inspired me to work harder and dig down deeper and make the extra calls, do the extra studying, do whatever I've got to do to compete. And then other people, you know, they teach broadcasting. These guys couldn't be a broadcaster if I spent my entire life trying to teach them. I've tried to teach some people how to do this. And, you know, the only person that I ever had any little impact, he was so naturally gifted and talented on his own, was Levin. And I said, Levin, you got to do what's called formatics in radio. He goes, all right, what's that? I said, you've got all the knowledge part. Now all we need to do is get you into the segment and out of the segment. And he filled in for me and he became a superstar. But he was a superstar on his own. He didn't need my help. I gave him little tips. about Formatics and radio. All right, I'm Mark Levin, sitting in for Sean Hannity. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get to your calls next. That's it. That part he didn't know. Or reading a commercial or something like that. He has the knowledge. He has the passion. He has the natural gifted talent. And look at what a huge success the show's become because of him. Tom Brady works harder. Larry Bird worked harder. Roger Federer winning the Australian Open was a huge moment, and because he and Nadal get to the final, they're both in their 30s, and they both went through a period of long sustained injuries, and they worked themselves back because that's what champions do. Tom Brady wanted that game more than anybody else, and he built a team around him. He built confidence around him. I mean, you're watching one of the best players of all time. And why he's hated so much makes me laugh. Oh, he should condemn Donald Trump. He doesn't have to condemn his friend. He's not on the field talking about, all right, blue 74, blue 74, vote for Donald, vote for Donald. He's not doing that. Would be funny if he did.
That would be hysterical.
What did Peyton Manning always say?
Omaha, Omaha.
Omaha, Omaha. Trump, Trump. Hillary, hike. You know? They're not, that's not what they do. Just like, you know, I was actually proud of Lady Gaga. It reminded me when I said something nice about her once before is when she was singing like all the classics, like Somewhere Over the Rainbow and all that stuff. When I realized what a really tremendous voice and artist she is, because a lot of these young singers today cannot do what she did. I tweeted out that I said Elton John is a incredible artist and performer. And did you see the responses to that tweet, Linda? He hates Trump. I'm like, I don't know if he hates Trump. He played at Rush's wedding. Like, what's the big deal? And I can tell you, he sings just as good today as he did 30 years ago. You got to look at a gift for what it is and appreciate that gift. That's why I've always said it is such a shame. If you believe, as I do, that every man, woman, and child is made by God, and I believe that with all my heart, mind, and soul, the Latin derivative for education is educare, to bring forth from within. It's predicated on a belief that every single child born in this world has talent and ability, and if we give it the right nourishment, water, sunlight, food, and values, that talent hopefully emerges to make the world a better place. And sports is the greatest lesson for life. You learn to win, you learn to lose, you learn life's not fair, and you also learn that the harder you work, the better you will do. That's why I love sports. Such a great game.
Sean Hannity Show is up next. Hang on for Sean's Conservative Solutions.
All right, back to our busy phones, and then we'll have a news roundup, information overload. Got a great Hannity tonight, 10 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Watching the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals tonight very closely, and this immigration decision and vetting decision. Kellyanne Conway will join us. Geraldo, we sent our cameras down to the border, and you can't believe what we found this weekend. And it's a Hannity exclusive tape. You need to see it. Also, Trump visiting CENTCOM. What do the Iran sanctions mean? Is there a potential showdown coming? We have the latest on media bias. And my buddy Stephen A. Smith, 10 Eastern tonight, Hannity. All right, let's get to our phones, though. Loopy, is that really your name in Orlando, 96.5 News Radio? What's going on?
Hi, Hannity. How are you? Thanks so much for having me on the air.
Are you really Loopy? Is that your name?
It's Guadalupe, but yeah, Loopy for short.
Oh, that's, and you don't mind being called a little bit loopy?
No, because it fits my personality.
I love that. I love your self-deprecating and honest. That's cool. So what's going on?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment about the snowflakes and the reactions to the Trump election. I cannot help but feel that it is a reaction to the whole political correctiveness that happened in the 90s and early 2000s, where everything was politically correct. You couldn't say anything that might even offend anybody, even though it was your personal opinion. And then that brought about the whole lack of common sense. I was raised with common sense. It was my father would, you know, you have to have common sense. You have to think things through. And I think society, with the political correctiveness and the lack of common sense, and the whole thing also with the, you know, I want it now, entitlement mentality, that's what's brought about this crazy reaction.
This is not going to stop. The battles in the courts, that's all in that Media Matters special memo I got you. You know, when you have somebody like Maxine Waters saying she wants to impeach Donald Trump already. For what? They want to impeach Donald Trump because they want their power back. You know, the fact that the courts are stuffed with liberals that legislate from the bench or people that feel they can impose their values on us, things that they could never win electorally, things that they could never win legislatively, this is how Democrats advance their agenda. And now they've had their, it's like weaning a child off of the bottle. It's like weaning a child off of their binkies. And if Trump vets refugees, picks an originalist, if he cuts taxes, if he builds a wall, if he becomes energy independent, if he gets rid of Obamacare, they're going to whine and scream and cry and throw a temper tantrum, and it's never going to stop. So I'm just saying expect 4 years of this. But if we want to fix the country, we better get all of those things done. Loopy, God bless you. You make a great point. We'll come back. When we do, News Roundup Information Overload is next. So my question is, who are you picking for the Super Bowl?
I'm going by colors, and I don't like red and black. So I'm going with the other team.
So you're going with colors. And how many points are the Patriots going to win by? It's radio. You got to talk.
I have no idea. I don't even have
any. You never are at a loss for words.
But I don't even know how many points they can have. I don't know. Let's say, 100 points? 50?
100. Okay, so you're picking the Patriots by 100 points. Okay, we'll go with that. Jason, who do you got this year?
So I'm going to pick the Falcons 29-24.
29-24. All right, so you got them by 5. All right, fine. Ethan, what do you got?
I got the exact opposite of Jason. I think England's going to win 29-24, but England's going to win. They got too much.
New England's going to win by 5. 29-24. You guys are given exact scores. Sunshine, who do you got?
I definitely pick the Patriots. I love them. I don't know by how much. I'm not really that into it, but I love them, so they're going to win.
So you think the Patriots are going to win, but you don't know by how. You have to pick by how many?
100.
100. Nobody picks by 100. What is wrong with you people? All right, I got the Patriots by 10, although I prefer it be a much closer game.
Freeman, what a cut! Touchdown, Atlanta! To the Patriots' offensive line, pass is picked! Intercepted, Robert Alford! He's gone. There are no flags. And the Falcons add to their lead. Alford with a pick six. Here's Edelman broken up. And the pass is no sign yet. Edelman comes down with a football. And they're saying it's a catch. Ryan steps through it. Throws on the run. And Jones with a catch. Phenomenal catch by Julio Jones on the sideline. This is a tie game. Amendola for two. He's in! Patriots win the Super Bowl! Brady has his fifth! What a comeback!
The most unbelievable Super Bowl in the history of the game. More excitement I've ever seen. What a comeback. And you know what? I was watching the whole time, and I knew Brady had it in him. Pretty unbelievable. Anyway, News Roundup, Information Overload, one of our many stories. The battle over immigration continues, and this judge's order we may hear at some point tonight from the Ninth Circuit. We'll be ready on Hannity if that, in fact, happens. We have the GOP. Why are they delaying tax cuts? Why don't they have their repeal and replace bill ready? Why are these courts not obeying the law? All of which we will discuss. Jeff Lord, former associate political director in the Reagan administration, columnist, author, What America Needs, The Case for Trump, Leslie Marshall, radio host, Fox News contributor. Welcome both of you. All right, who did you both pick for the Super Bowl? And I bet you're both going to lie. Go ahead.
I am not going to lie, Shaw. I believe, like Leslie, I too am from Massachusetts, and I would automatically be for the Patriots.
Yes, actually, Jeff and I agree on something. When you're from Massachusetts,
agree,
you automatically
Sean.
Have to be for the Patriots.
So you're both from Massachusetts.
The Celtics and the Bruins.
Exactly. Well, now, Sean, you need to know that Leslie and I have consulted, and we agree on one other thing.
What's that?
We think that the ratings for your TV show would go through the roof if instead of standing there at a desk when the show opens, you swung in on a rope in Lady Gaga's outfit.
I think Jeff and I also agree wearing exactly what Lady Gaga
yes.
wore.
Oh, yeah, really? That's like Phil Robertson saying, hey, Hannity, you want to get them ratings up? Let's go back there in the swamp. By the way, there are alligators and snakes in a swamp, okay? And he goes, I'll baptize you right there on the program, and that'll get your ratings up. And I'm like, all right. So I actually wasn't even offended by Lady Gaga. I mean, I don't like her music.
I thought she was great.
Honestly, I thought it was very entertaining. I'd never been the biggest fan of hers, although she did really impress me once when she was singing like some of the old classics, like, you know, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, one of those songs. And she really loves those classics.
She has a great voice.
She really does.
And honestly, one of the things that, you know, I give to her, this doesn't sound, although I think, you know, she's beautiful, she is talented, because there'll be people
yes.
that are like, oh, she's not a supermodel or whatever, but she writes the songs, many of which that, you know, you hear her perform. She plays numerous instruments, and then on top of it, she, you know, is a great dancer, she's a great entertainer, and that's what people want to see at a Super Bowl halftime show.
I don't want to hear any Hollywood actor, actress, or musician tell me their political feelings, especially when they're based in such ignorance. I mean, the outcry by Ashton Kutcher, and by the way, did he marry his mother once? How old was that woman he was married to?
Oh, God.
How old? She was like 30 years older, right? It looked like...
Hot but older.
Oh, really? Hot but older. Okay, good luck with explaining that to Jeff Zucker tonight, Jeffrey. Great. But, I mean, so I don't want to hear from him. I don't want to hear from Meryl Streep. I don't want to hear from Madonna. Ashley Judd is out of her mind, and it kind of represents your entire party, which is on, like, permanent nonstop meltdown mode every day.
Wait a minute, Sean. It's interesting to me that if a celebrity gets up and speaks in favor of the president or against some of what Hollywood's saying, like a Harrison Ford, or recently about embracing like a Matthew McConaughey or a Morgan Freeman.
All McConaughey said is give him...
That's okay, though, right? That's okay to do?
All McConaughey said and all Nicole Kidman said was give the guy a chance. I mean, this is ridiculous.
But you don't attack them for their political views and their Hollywood celebrities.
Okay,
the thing is,
They're not screaming about blowing up the White House, and they're not screaming about I'm nasty like the blood stains on my sheets, or the girls at the View
awful.
Screaming about building borders around their vaginas.
Yeah, but what Lady Gaga did last night is actually, if you hear the word, and I had forgotten the song I sang as a child in school, "This Land Is Your Land, This Land Is My Land, This Land Was Made For You and Me." Now, some people took that.
By the way, this land is Trump country. And
going to be political.
Trump won.
I thought what she did was a message of unity, which when you look at what's going on in our country right now is badly needed, even if it's just for a moment during a Super Bowl.
Okay, listen, it was never united under Obama. Obama never brought anybody together. And Obama reminded Republicans constantly, elections have consequences. I won. And by the way, you guys can come along, but you've got to sit in back. And by the way, he talked about social Darwinists and everything else that he said that was divisive and tearing down Paul Ryan in front of the entire country that day.
Sean, that he attacked federal judges, i.e. the Supreme Court, when they were sitting right in front of him.
Right in front of
him.
Exactly.
Jeff, would you like a few sound bites of our current president attacking federal judges when he was campaigning?
That's my point. That's my point, Leslie, is that he said that
they go berserk. And now the
federal judges, even a Bush appointed. Obama doesn't. It isn't just Obama. I have a column coming out in the American Spectator. I've gone back and look. It's Andrew Jackson. It's Abraham Lincoln couldn't stand the Chief Justice of the United States, and minutes after the guy sworn in, he stood on the steps of the Capitol and attacked the Supreme Court for its decisions on
slavery. But wait a minute. You're saying Obama shouldn't have done that, but it was okay for Abraham Lincoln to do that. I'm just trying to be clear.
Saying that it happens a lot, so what's the deal with Trump? Who cares?
Because Trump is saying things like so-called judge. He is not, as a matter of fact, there are even people on the right, who I have heard all over radio in the past 24 hours, saying that it really just doesn't help him, and it doesn't help him look presidential. Hey, Jeff, Sean, you know, if you look at Twitter, there are more and more people saying, hey, I voted for you not to do this, and this isn't the reason why. What about the jobs? What about the economy? And then there are people saying, I voted for you, and I regret my decision, and the guy isn't even
hey,
in the
Jeffrey,
top
correct me if I'm wrong. I saw three articles today about this. How many Muslim countries ban people with Jewish passports? Do you know how many?
I don't, but I assume it's a lot. I know that there seems to be a dearth of temples in Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, UAE, Sudan, Pakistan,
exactly.
Oman, Malaysia, Lebanon, Kuwait.
Pakistan is not correct.
I mean, tolerance
Syria is
tolerance. We're going to
okay.
have tolerance in
Brunei,
both ways.
Bangladesh, Algeria, Libya, Yemen, Iraq, Iran, and Syria.
Thank you. Exactly.
Like these Muslim nations, or should we be better than that?
Oh, okay. Why doesn't
because
the world... Wait a minute. Why?
We're not a theocracy.
Hang on a second. We are better than that, because all we're saying is if you come from countries that have strong ties to terror, we're going to vet you. In their cases, we are better. They don't allow Jewish passports in their countries.
Today that came out that all
and
of
maybe
the
we should stand
that we have allowed into the United States since 1974.
Okay, maybe we should stand in solidarity with Israel.
Not one.
And maybe we should be careful about allowing people in here who think it's okay to kill people because they're gay.
Well, you know what, Jeffrey? I'm looking around, and I think a lot of people who are born in this country have that problem, and we're not addressing that problem.
Who in this country, by the way, who's been the loudest voice about the killing of gays and lesbians under Sharia? Who has been the loudest voice, Leslie? Well, me and people like Jeff. I've been the loudest voice about the mistreatment of women, about the persecution of Christians and Jews.
Sorry, guys, got to trump you on this because, and no pun intended, because I lived in Pakistan and people are confusing like a country's laws with Sharia law. And may I just give you a 2 second?
Countries practice Sharia as their general law.
In this country, if you are an Orthodox Jew, if you are to get divorced, you go through two court systems: the Orthodox Jewish court system for your religious side of your marriage and the United States court system to legally dissolve that marriage. It is the same for Muslims. That is what Sharia law is here in the United States. Sharia law technically is not about oppression of women. What has been perverted in some of these countries where they have oppressed women, and I see oppression of women here if a president's telling a woman how to dress,
Who's talking about, are women told how to dress in America? No, they're not. Are women told they can't drive? No, they're not.
The United States said you have to dress, it's policy that in the White House you have to dress like a woman.
Who said that?
Well,
Donald Trump.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I do know.
I have a little bit. I mean, I haven't seen this thing, but I heard something about it today. And let me just remind here, Leslie, that in the Carter White House, people were running around in their blue jeans all the time. And when the Reagan White House took over, men had to wear
suits.
Suits and ties.
By the way, I'm kind of, that's the only thing I agree with Jimmy Carter on my whole life is wearing jeans and a t-shirt.
I don't have a problem with the dress code if somebody is aware of that when they apply for or get a job for both men and women.
By the way,
to your point, Jeffrey.
Excuse
However,
me.
As
it
a
does
woman,
apply to men.
I don't want to be told what I can and cannot wear by any government.
All right, you know what? This is such a ridiculous argument on your part, because we're talking about women that are told they must cover up. We're told about women that can't drive, women that can't go to school or work without their husband's approval, can't travel abroad without their husband's approval. In some cases, Leslie, let me finish. In other Sharia countries, women can also be victims of marital rape, and it's not against the law. So don't compare a dress code, which most corporations have. Thank God they don't have them in radio. I have a dress code at Fox. I've got to wear a shirt, a jacket, and a tie. And I hate wearing a shirt, a jacket, and a tie. Last word.
You're applying what Saudi Arabia does to every Muslim country and into an entire religion, and that's
what we'll come back and get Jeff's final word on this.
Making America first, safe, and great again. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
right as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, toll-free telephone numbers 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. Jeff Lord, Leslie Marshall, we'll get to your calls when we come back at the bottom of the half hour. What you just stated is true. There was an article citing an anonymous source who claimed to have worked with Donald Trump in the unspecified past, and he held that Trump strongly preferred a specific style of dress among staffers. The article did not say that anyone in the Trump administration was compelled to wear a dress. This all began in the International Business Times, et cetera, et cetera. So that's not confirmed, Leslie, and you speak as though that's truth, that Donald Trump is telling. It was not uncommon, if you work at the White House, that you're supposed to wear a suit if you're a guy and look your best if you're a woman. That goes usually with the territory. If you work in corporate America, most people are stuck wearing those god-awful suits. If you work in television, you got to put on a stupid tie every night. I know, I work in television. So, I mean, why are you comparing that to Sharia? That's nuts.
I'm not comparing that to Sharia. And again, Sharia is not about how you dress. People are taking Sharia law. People like titles in this country and don't always know what that title means. Sharia law actually has to do with marriages. It has to do with property, has to do with custody of children. What you're talking about are some Muslim countries, like Saudi Arabia. Let's use that as an example, because I would say arguably the most horrific. I mean, women have the right to vote, but they can't drive
but
yet.
But we can also talk about Sharia in Syria, Iran, Iraq. Iraq, Yemen. No, you're downplaying this.
Either, can they?
Kuwait, Oman, the UAE. All of these have extreme measures of mistreatment of women under the banner of Sharia.
That is not under the banner of
yes,
Sharia.
Yes, it is.
And nor is it under the banner of Islam. Yeah. It's a perversion of that. Just
okay, all these Muslim countries are perverting it then.
It is a perversion of that. You know what?
And it's widespread.
In this country, guys, there is an incidence of domestic violence every 14 seconds. I would say that's a mistreatment and oppression of women.
Wow. Leslie, there's a difference between some guy who's out of control and somebody who is deliberately going to commit an honor killing. I mean, wouldn't you say?
Oh, well, wait a minute. I agree, but if somebody who's out of control ends up murdering that individual, premeditated
well, yeah,
or otherwise...
But I mean, it's not a cultural norm to murder your wife.
The result's the same.
Or your daughter, or, you know, what have you. I mean, that's just so far beyond the pale. I mean, I can't even believe I have to say that.
Understanding. What I'm saying is the ban applies to seven nations, none of which have we ever had a terrorist attack from somebody from one of those
nations. Leslie, wait, stop.
The nations that we have are not.
Leslie, that's not true.
Two,
we're banning...
Leslie, you got to let him talk.
What happened on 9/11. It's what happens today or yesterday. And so this assessment is based on the intelligence community's understanding of the current threat situation in those seven countries today.
Here's my last question. Why are liberals like you willing to gamble with people's lives? And if, in fact, one of these unvetted refugees, because of a court order, kills an American, who then should have blood on their hands?
Who has blood on their hands?
You're not going to answer my question,
but
are you?
I'm asking
I have
you a question.
No.
Over 300 mass shootings.
Leslie, I have 30 seconds left. Answer my question. Who would have blood on their hands if an unvetted refugee kills an American? That's my question.
Can I ask you something? Is it worse a crime if somebody...
Leslie, now we have 10 seconds. You don't... Leslie, you know why you won't answer the question? Because you can't answer the question, because the answer is obvious. The judges and those that don't want to vet. We're only vetting, and it's only temporary, and it's to secure the American people. I got to go. We'll continue. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. So remember what I got from Jim Gray, one of the most unbelievable sports broadcasters in the history of the medium. And he could do every sport, football. He was calling the game for Westwood One, and he did a great job. And he's done boxing, every single sport. He has encyclopedic knowledge. So after Trump won the election, he would write me during the election. He'd say, man, he goes, you're hanging out there pretty far in that limb. You okay? Because he's my friend. He's my friend. And I go, Jim, I'm just doing what I think is right. I'm just standing up for what I believe is right. And I think the country needs dramatic change because we're declining precipitously. So after the election, you know what he sent me? An autographed Patriots jersey, autographed by Tom Brady, and an autographed NFL football signed by Tom Brady. And I'm thinking after yesterday's win. Now, I was planning on giving it to my son. Now, my son, who's the biggest Dallas Cowboys fan in the history of mankind, I don't know how he became a Cowboys fan. He, quote, they're America's team, Dad. You ought to know better. That's what he says to me. He was caught last night when the Patriots were down. He kept saying, never rule out Brady. He just kept saying it. Now, he's probably, and this is not something that I think I should be proud of, he's probably the best FanDuel player I've ever met. You know, I got mad at my son. Now, look, there's worse things you can get mad at. But he plays Madden all the time in all those football games. They've got it designed now on Xbox. I've never been able to figure out these games. And I remember when he was 4 years old, I finally got him a PlayStation, and that we bonded over PlayStation and the Scooby-Doo game, Night of 100 Frights. And it took me forever. I think he was 3 years old. Forever. There's like 15 layers of this thing. And you got to get these coins, and you got to put the coins in a certain cave, and then you got to go get more Scooby snacks to get to the next level. And it's so addicting. It's so addicting. So my wife didn't particularly like that I was playing it all Saturday, all Sunday, every Saturday, every Sunday with him. I'm like, no, you got to think through this. This is really good for his mind because it makes you smart. Anyway, so I spent an entire weekend, even tried to look up the cheat sheets, how to kill the mastermind, which was the final layer of the game. And even cheating, I couldn't figure it out. And then the next Monday, he gets home from school. He goes right on the PlayStation, calls me in a break during a radio show and goes, Daddy, I killed the mastermind. I'm like, and then he tried to show me how to do it, and I still couldn't do it. So he surpassed me at like 3 or 4 in terms of these games. Anyway, so I kind of got a little pissed off at him because he spent probably about $1,000. Well, I'm just telling you the truth. And he built like the best Madden and NBA teams ever because you can buy players with money. And he's out there building the best team. And I'm like, all these charges for Xbox. I'm like, what the heck is this? I said, oh, somebody must have got my credit card number. But then I called him and I said, have you been using my credit card? Oh, yeah, I'm winning left and right, Dad. And I built the team and this. And I mean, what am I supposed to do? Yell at him? You know, take my credit card away? Well, I just told him to stop. I mean, if he keeps doing it, I'll take the credit card away. But the reality is he figures out how to do these things. And he goes into all these sports betting things and, you know, of course, of legal age. And meaning his coach does it, you know, he wins every time. And it's kind of amazing how you'd never know how a kid is going to turn out, what their level of interest is going to be. And I just sit there in amazement. I said to him, wait a minute, let me get this straight. You spent $1,000 on Xbox Madden NBA players, and you didn't ask first. So maybe I should keep the Brady ball and the Brady jersey. What do you think?
You should definitely keep it. He'll get it when 20 years, 40 years from now.
Oh, you're about to say when I die. Go ahead, say it.
I was going to say when you die, but, you know, they're going to hook you up to all types of stuff. You're going to live forever.
Oh, they're going to hook me up to all types of stuff. So I'm going to be hooked up to a breathing machine. Welcome back to the...
Well, who's going to host the show? Linda?
I don't know if the audience could hack Linda, and I don't think there's enough dump space on our network to cover the amount of F-bombs she'll drop over the course of a year. It would be impossible. She would not be able to control herself. I have had to dump you a number of times myself and edit out comments myself when you've been on this program. That's how dangerous you are with a microphone. There's a real danger there. First of all you peoples, let me talk to you in real Philly language, first of all. Anyway, let's get to our phones. Terry is in Texas. Terry, how are you? Glad you called.
Great. How are you, Sean?
I'm good. What's happening?
The Super Bowl was great. I love comeback games.
So do I.
It was like a rerun of the election.
You know, I swear I was thinking the same thing. I'm saying, at 5:15, I'm on the air. I'm half paying attention to my show because I'm looking at all the exit polls. Exit polls right. In November, Trump lost North Carolina, he lost Florida, lost Ohio, lost Pennsylvania, lost Michigan, lost Wisconsin. And then I got to a break, and the first thing I did was call now who's now the president, and I said, don't pay attention to the exit polls. They are not accurate. And he goes, how do you know? And I said to him, because in 2004, the exit poll showed John Kerry winning by a landslide. And former Vice President Dick Cheney called in the final hour of my program on Election Day 2004, thinking he needed people to race out and vote. So in this case, you saw the comeback right before your eyes. It was pretty cool to watch.
That's cool. My husband's family fled from Castro when he was two. And we both fled from New Jersey to Texas.
Good for you. You know how much money New York, New Jersey, and Illinois and California are losing? Billions. Billions of dollars in wealth. You know why? Because they have pushed everybody out. And here's my only, if you want to leave New York, if you want to leave New Jersey, if you want to leave Pennsylvania, if you want to leave California, okay. But don't take the stupid liberal values that destroyed your states with you and then ruin Florida, the Carolinas, and Texas. If you want to be a liberal, stay where you are. If you're willing to be a normal human being with common sense, you can move to a red state. How's that?
And Governor Abbott has town halls over the phone for the entire state, and he lets people call in. And someone from my town asked if there would be a state income tax put in place in Texas. And he said, not as long as I'm in office, there will never be a state income tax.
Listen, Rick Perry and Governor Abbott are two great guys. You guys are very lucky in Texas, and that's why the state's prospering. Wait till energy comes back, which it is now. It's making its comeback. It's going to be a boom for Texas, boom for Oklahoma. North Dakota's coming back. OPEC purposely drove down prices to drive American companies out of business. And if we commit ourselves to energy independence, we are going to win the long game, which is how you have to look at it. Chad is in Texas. Thank you so much, Terry. Chad, how are you?
Man, I'm doing good. Like you, Sean, and it's great to talk with you again. Like you, I was going for the Patriots, and they capped off my birthday yesterday with a hell of a comeback win, so it was great.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you very much. I listened to your show and Rush's, and well, I did listen as much to Mark Levin's show as yours and Rush's. I'm doing traveling, hauling, and stuff, so I can listen to you guys on the radio. You guys are on the Trump train, you and Rush are. But is it just me, or does it seem like nothing is ever good enough? And I know he's your friend, I know he's your buddy, but does it seem like nothing is good enough for Mark Levin?
Well, first of all, let me just say this, and you got to understand, you're talking about my brother here, and he could do no wrong in my eyes. He is one of the brightest constitutionalists in the country, and his books, Ameritopia and Liberty and Tyranny, these are going to be classics that last for centuries, and people will refer to them. And the fact that he adheres to strict constructionism and originalism and original intent and the understanding of what a republic is, I've learned a lot from Mark. And one of the things that I think, you know, all of us are just very different in how we approach our shows. I mean, which I think benefits the audience. We have general views. We have moments where we agree and disagree. I mean, we're not this monolithic groupthink that's out there. We don't ever compare notes ever about what we're talking about or what we're doing. But I think of him as a national treasure. And the fact that he's holding, I think, every Republican, including the president, accountable, which I'm doing too, as I did earlier in the program today, is the right thing to do. It's the healthy thing to do. And he brings a level of intellect to this medium that I think, you know, it's him and Barry Farber, probably the two smartest guys ever to get behind a radio microphone. And I just think the world of him. So you can't say a bad word about him to me, because I love the guy. And he loved the pick of Neil Gorsuch. And that was probably the biggest winning moment for conservatives in 9 years, in my opinion. Back to our phones. Thank you. We have Sandy in California. Sandy, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Hi, Sean. I wanted to comment about the overreaction to Trump talking about Putin this weekend. And basically the way I see it is Trump is a patriot. Trump wants to put Americans first, and Trump wants to keep Americans safe. He's part of a movement. He's a leader of a movement. He wants to try, and he understands it may not work, but he wants to try to work with Putin to get rid of ISIS. Well, you can't. It doesn't make any sense to me to think you can call someone a killer and then work with them. So I think Trump's such a smart guy, he knew it would be a mistake to call Putin a killer. And in regards to his other comment about America has killed, it's like the media, the Democrats, and the paid protesters have forgotten that Obama ordered a large number of drone strikes, in which some cases there was possible collateral damage. And I just think they're looking at it wrong, and they want to cherry-pick everything.
Here's what I know about Donald Trump.
Themselves.
Here's my take on it, and I don't think I've been wrong about him. I got an email from a friend of mine today trying to make it an analogy about who Trump was, and I just disagreed with it. I said, I know him, I think, as well as anybody, and I don't think you're understanding his thought process. Donald Trump is going to look at every single situation, and I don't care, every foreign leader with fresh eyes. And he's not going in with rose-colored glasses here. I think he has full knowledge and understanding of Crimea and Ukraine. He has full understanding of the background, KGB, of Vladimir Putin. But remember, you know, and I use this analogy, and somebody actually wrote a column making fun of it. And I'm thinking, well, the United States and the Russians allied in World War II to defeat Nazism. Now, they were our sworn enemy then. Remember, General Patton wanted to go straight to Russia and clobber them right after and get rid of one problem after another. It didn't happen. But the Cold War came and went, and we won it because Ronald Reagan outmaneuvered them. So there are times in history where an enemy of my enemy is a friend. And in this case, that might be an opportunity to help wipe out ISIS. Now, if Putin has territorial ambitions, if Putin has other agendas involved, well, we're going to have to deal with it as it arises, as these situations arise. And I know Trump well enough to also know that if Putin double deals him, if Putin is less than trustworthy, he's going to have no problem at all telling Putin to pound sand. He doesn't care. He doesn't need his approval. Look, here's one of the things you got to know about Trump. Trump doesn't need people's approval. That is a very, very admirable quality to me. One of the things I've learned over the 30 years I've been in radio is I don't really give a rip that these people write articles about me, say things about me on radio and TV, tweet things out that are horrible about me. I don't care. And if you don't care, it doesn't matter. And that propelled him to victory. It was a big part of his victory was the amount of courage that he would say what he means what he say, not back down, not be constantly apologizing to the country's PC police. That's a strength to me. That's not a weakness.
If you're ready to get out of the media spin room, you've come to the right place. This is the Sean Hannity Show.